9.5 FM WBAI New York and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 following the work of the Midnight Ravers. And stay tuned for Back of the Book.
FM, WBAI, New York.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI, New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI, New York, and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good, so we know you're pulling for us. Go run right now to WBAI.org and look around, see where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
For me, it's probably about a groggy 5 a.m. and you're listening to All There Goes Another Year Radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And in whatever condition they may be in. You can find out more about what we're going to talk about here on this program by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that, and you'll get to the webpage for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 160th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't reference them on this program. A recorded program can't be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story of the week throughout all of the local galaxy cluster is on Twitter. We have rocketed back up to a staggering total of 123 followers on Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week. Everyone is amazed at that huge number. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, January 10th, 2024 at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. We held the first meeting of the 13th WBAI local station board on December 10th, and we've had elections for some of the LSB officers. So the chair and secretary have been elected, and good elections there, good people in the offices. And I was reelected treasurer of the WBAI local station board because no one else ran for the office. Currently, there's an election going on for the office of vice chair, and we'll see how that works out. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has their CDC website, and they are putting out information about COVID-19 again. They say that as of their last reading, the death toll in America from COVID-19 was 1,163,040. That works out to 1,438 people dying from COVID-19 over this past week. Yeah, it's still here. The pandemic is still going on. Over 1,400 people died of it in this past week alone. So it's not over. And Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We got our new vaccinations against COVID-19, so we're doing what we can, and we don't want to get this disease. I will note that the JN1 variant is now doing a bit more than half the infections of COVID-19 in this area. And, some people are getting the flu and COVID-19 together. That's not a healthy combination. And besides getting our COVID-19 vaccinations, the latest up-to-date one Pickles and I got, we also got our flu shots. So, yeah, we're watching out for this stuff. We're doing what we can. And a program note, we are recording this program in our bedroom instead of in our living room again. I haven't learned how to figure out how the HP 2200 printer grabs the paper as it prepares to print anything yet, and I have to figure that out so I can make it grab the paper again properly. Oh, boy. It's such a simple little thing. I might even be able to fix it by wrapping a rubber band around a piece of plastic, but I don't know that for certain. And I may have to take part of the printer apart. That's going to be a little bit of a problem. We got a new toner cartridge for it, and hell, we may end up having to sell a new, brand new, unused toner cartridge on eBay or something soon. I don't know. If we can't get it going, we can't get it going. On the last program, Pickles of the North talked a bit about superstitions around these holidays. Well, the holidays are winding down at this point. We have one more big one left, and Pickles of the North has a little bit more about stuff around the end of the year.
Yes, I do, and this is from A Dictionary of Superstitions, From the Ridiculous to the Sublime, by Sophie Lazon and André-Pascal Gaultier. Yes, it's translated from the French. And we have a couple of excerpts. This one is Superstitions Surrounding the Year. In Rome, the beginning of the year was March 1st until the intervention of Caesar, whose name actually was pronounced Kaiser. Was that really?
Yeah.
Julius. You say it, Arpal.
Something like Julius Kaiser. That's why the Germans, when they decided to invent the German Empire in 1871 in France, they said, "Hey, let's call our guy the Kaiser." Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. The pronunciation of a lot of Latin, the way it works in English, was changed around the year 1900, around the turn of the century, from the 19th to 20th century, I am told. They changed it. I only have a bit of church Latin. That's all I have. But this is what I've been told, is that there was a big change in the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries, and that's why we refer to Cicero and not Cicero. Anyway, yes, Julius Caesar doing something.
Well, whichever way you choose to pronounce his name, he chose January 1st to be the start of the new year. Before finally being fixed on this date, the first day of the year fluctuated many times. In France, under the Merovingians, the year began on March 1st. Under the Carolingians, it began on Christmas Day. The Capetians preferred March 25th. In the 11th century, the year was made to begin on Easter Day. Finally, Charles IX fixed the date of January 1st in 1564, and that's just for France. This date remained unchanged except when the Republican calendar decided to make the year begin on the day of the spring equinox. It is easy to understand that doubts placed on all sayings have to do with the new year that date back before the 15th century. Whatever its place on the calendar, the first day of the year has always been celebrated as a hope for the 12 months to come. Which brings us to St. Sylvester / New Year's Eve, which had been called a long time, in some places still is, Old Year Day. So that's what tomorrow, Sunday, would be called, Old Year Day, which I kind of like. On this day, everyone hangs mistletoe on the ceiling or in doorways. When midnight sounds, families and friends kiss each other under the mistletoe while wishing each other a Happy New Year. This tradition comes from the Celtic Druidism. Yes, and we went into that when we did our little segment on mistletoe. It brings misfortune if you let the fire go out on the night of St. Sylvester. Who the hell is St. Sylvester, you may ask? Supposedly, he's a guy who convinced Constantine, Emperor Constantine, to become a Christian, the Roman Emperor Constantine. I don't know if St. Sylvester ever lived or not. Supposedly, he was a pope, but you know, there are a lot of claims about who has been a pope.
Yeah.
So, we continue. And apparently he died on December 31st.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin.
If on this night the wind blows from the west, there will be great abundance of milk and fish. But a great person in this world will disappear. Wow. That doesn't necessarily mean they've died, I guess. They just disappear. If it blows from the east, especially from the northeast, there is a danger of famine or some other calamity. If it blows from the north, it foretells cold and a tempest followed by abundance. If it blows from the south, the year will be warm and prosperous. If the night is clear and there is no wind, there will be an abundance of all goods. Here's some superstitions about New Year's Day. Upon waking up, you must toss your right shoe into the air. If it falls right side up, it is a sign you will get married. If it is pointed toward the door, it leaves no hope regarding marriage. The first stranger encountered in a house or crossing the threshold is of the greatest importance. In general, encountering a woman is a bad omen. Encountering a man is the sign of a good year ahead.
Whoa! Jeez, that sounds... Well, I don't know how that works out.
I don't know, but we're going to make you walk back and forth through the doorway at midnight.
Oh, what does that do for me?
Well, that will be good luck.
Oh, and... If I throw my shoe up in the air and it comes down, does that mean I'm going to get married again?
Well, I think it might mean that you might hit yourself on the head. So that would not be good luck. That would not be good luck. In general, all the events of this day risk dominating the months to come. If, for example, you have the misfortune of being penniless on this day, you will be poor all year long. All wishes made for a loved one have a very good chance of being granted. Ooh. In Alsace, this day is particularly grave for young women. If the first person they encounter is a man, they will marry within the year. If it is a woman, they will remain single or have a quarrelsome mother-in-law to tolerate. If they find themselves in front of two men, they will have a lover in the year. Boy, I bet those superstitions have changed over time. In Scotland, if the first person to enter a house after the last stroke of midnight on New Year's Day is a black-haired man carrying a coal shovel, it will be a good year for the entire family.
Oh, Jesus Christ. After midnight, he's carrying a coal in and...
But he has to have black hair, though.
Well, is he going to make a baby there or something? Is that what's going to happen? Boy, oh boy, there are some inferences we could make about some of these superstitions here and what they mean and what they meant at some time in the past.
Well, here's the rest of it. This is so widespread that in some regions, a tall, dark-haired man is recruited, especially for the occasion. So I guess they paid some guy. In my family, it had to be red-haired. A red-haired man had to come through the door. So, like, my mother's cousin Tony was the big one. They got to do this.
Oh, geez. They were actually doing this crap?
Oh, please. Oh, geez. Were the 20th century Irish superstitious at all? Oh, gosh. Perhaps not. In the last century in eastern France, peasants followed the custom of wishing trees a happy new year. Also, molehills were destroyed in order to be rid of them for the year. New Year's Day allows the weather of the future to be foreseen. And here are some sayings, some superstitious sayings. A calm and clear New Year's night gives enthusiasm for a good year. Mild, clear weather on New Year's Day assures good weather for the year. A bad year comes in swimming. I like the one about wishing the trees Happy New Year.
Though. Yeah, Merry New Year, trees.
That's very old. That's like what they do in England where they pour cider onto the roots of the apple tree during the 12 days of Christmas to encourage the tree to bear lots of fruit.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
In the coming season. It's very old. That stuff is very, very old. So, and something else that seemed appropriate for this time of year, we turn to another section in the superstitions book. Intoxication.
Oh, well, I think there's some of that happens sometimes these days.
Oh, I'm sure there may even be some dear listeners who are nursing their heads right now.
And getting ready to nurse some more in it. In another day.
It's quite possible, yes. Here's some superstitions about intoxication. There exist as many techniques for disgusting a drinker with alcohol as for making him drink without getting drunk. In general, a more or less nauseating product is mixed into a drunkard's favorite drink. Some put a live eel into it. Others mix some of the drunkard's fresh blood in some red wine.
Oh, man, that's going to put you off your booze.
A crushed owl's egg will have the same effect, whether it is consumed in wine or in an omelet. Oh. Some also use a powder made from a dead man's bone stolen from a cemetery by the full moon. These superstitious, you know, things you have to do are very complicated.
Yeah, they're complicated. They're also illegal in every place I know of. I mean, grave robbing is a crime somewhere.
Well, it probably was at the time, too, but, you know, getting someone's blood or sticking a live eel in their drink.
Yeah, that eel isn't going to be live for very long. You put it in all that alcohol.
In order to sober up a drunk man, roll him in manure and make him drink some olive oil. Then he smells his own urine and wraps his genitals in a vinegar-soaked linen.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing to do. That'll wake you up. Sure, that'll... Oh, man. I wonder how...
Who comes up with this stuff?
How did they figure this particular idea out?
I mean, did somebody say, you know, Jacques is bothering everyone again.
Wrap his genitals in...
vinegar-soaked linen.
God.
After rolling him in manure. Do you think it will help him? I don't know.
But it'll certainly make it so we don't want him around. He's going to stink like
Oh, we will be able to tell that he is coming down the road before we see him, and then maybe we shall hide. A woman places the same cloth on her breasts. Oh, man. Certain precautions allow a person to drink to his heart's content without becoming drunk. The Welsh eat roasted pig's lungs, assuring them immunity for 24 hours. Poor little piggies. It is also possible to take 2 spoonfuls of betony water and 1 of olive oil. And the betony plant is just, it's a member of the mint family. So that actually sounds like that wouldn't be terrible to drink. A person must especially not drink from a glass that smells of savory or burned fingernails.
Oh, burned fingernails. How do you get that?
Well,
what part of the celebration results in burned fingernails?
Perhaps you have to, you're cooking. And, you know, it's not like they had a lot of pot holders or things like that, perhaps.
If you're burning your fingernails while you're cooking, you're going to, you might want to drink a lot of booze to take the pain away. I don't know. This is...
Well, perhaps that happens first. Perhaps you are drinking a lot of wine before, you know, you actually burn your fingernails.
Boy, these superstitions are really bizarre things, and yet people believed in them, and I bet you some people are believing in them today.
I bet the one where you roll somebody in manure and...
Well, rolling a drunk in manure, that's the kind of thing that could just happen, you know?
Friends don't let friends get rolled in manure.
Or friends roll their drunken friends in manure because they're drunk too, and what the hell? Let's roll Harry in the horse bleep over here and ha ha ha.
Well, we hope that none of you experience any of these superstitions during your New Year's celebrations. Oh, one of the things I got to do before the year ended was I went to our dear friends, the M&Ms, and their daughter, I, and we watched the Barbie movie, and it was so much fun. I laughed a lot, and it was touching and interesting, and gosh, I guess you can relate to it more if you actually, like, played with Barbie and or Ken. But it was just a really good movie, and I'm really glad I got to see it. And my mother never let me have a Ken doll, you know.
Why not?
She was afraid that I would do something bad with the Ken and the Barbie. As they point out in the movie more than once, there's nothing for them to do anything with, you know, with their dolls.
Your mother would be offended by the hint.
I know. Well, she was, you know. Because I'm sure kids were doing all kinds of things with their dolls, you know. And the boys' dolls, of course, were called action figures, but they're dolls. And some boys were doing all kinds of things with Ken, I'm sure. You know.
Yes. And if you had toy soldiers.
That's right.
Hey, guys, here we are all in the trench fighting a war. Let's get on top of each other.
Oh, jeez.
Of course, you know, they were all in their battle armor and had guns and stuff, so it was a little bit awkward. You couldn't really usually find it so easily.
Jeez.
To get them in a position where anything could really go on.
Again, they are dolls. But but it is a very good movie, and I really needed to laugh, and so that was really wonderful to be able to do that.
So while we were getting ready to record this program, I saw a piece in the newspaper about a rogue wave hitting the beach at Ventura, California, and 8 people were injured, and 2 of them were still in critical condition on Thursday night. And a rogue wave is a wave that just suddenly shows up and is big. And, you know, part of the thing is that when you look at the water and it's not perfectly glassy calm, you have all these little wavelets in it and all of that, there's quite a bit of energy in those. And you might wonder, what would happen if a lot of that energy came together? Well, you would get a big wave. And something along those lines can happen. And Rogue waves have been getting researched over the past number of years because they're kind of mysterious. They were denied to exist for a long time. It started out with people saying, oh, you know, you go out in the ocean sea and that can happen. This is like in the very old times, like 1,000 years ago. You say, geez, you don't want to go out there. A big wave will smash your boat. And then people said, well, there's no such thing, and it's okay. And you had steam engines going back and forth. Still, now and again, ship disappears, and you never see it again. USS Goliath is one of those types of things. It was a collier. It hauled coal during World War I, and nobody torpedoed it or anything. It just didn't show up where it was supposed to show up, and they never found a trace of it. And ships have had this happen at times, and they are now referred to as rogue waves, the waves that just show up out of nowhere and are big. And there are now some records of those things hitting ships and being, you know, doing devastation to the ships. So, yeah. I guess they can come up onto the beach at Ventura, California, too, and the people hanging out on the beach suddenly find themselves looking at this thing. One person said, gee, I thought it was a tsunami. And it's not a tsunami because that's a very specific thing, but a rogue wave can be pretty damn big, and obviously it can hurt people. I wonder if this is something that is being fueled by climate change and global warming, because there is more energy in the water. And that's the thing you got to look at, the energy and where it is. And there's a lot of energy in the water that didn't used to be there. So that energy would be available to produce a rogue wave of some power. So I don't know if it's caused by climate change, but it might be, and I would not be at all surprised by it. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. So, remembering things, 50 years ago, my male ex took me and about 25 students from the high school he taught at to see the Nutcracker at Radio City Music Hall. And this was a big thing for them because they didn't get to go to places like that. You had to dress up a little bit. And, you know, you would go there and you would tell them what it's going to be about, what's happening, all this. And they would go there and they would see the Nutcracker. And, it, you know, it was a cultural event and they got to see it. And they were, in general, very thrilled to see it. And afterwards, after we saw all of that, he would take us all out to a restaurant afterwards. It was an Italian restaurant that he always brought everybody to, and everybody got to eat for free. And so, yeah, that was the thing my male ex used to do. This is years and years before he became the teacher at the Harvey Milk School, the first gay high school in New York. And so he was taking all these kids out and exposing them to culture that they weren't going to get exposed to otherwise. And I went along, too, because I wasn't exposed to that stuff either.
Did you like it?
Oh, you know, it was okay. I said, okay, there it is. You know, but I went every year with him. He did this for years and years.
So were these the Rockettes that were performing this?
No.
It was ballet.
It's ballet.
Ballet.
Yeah. But the Rockettes were there dancing around. But, you know, the main thing was the Nutcracker. And so we all got to see it.
Fred was a great teacher. I mean, he really loved his students and loved teaching, and yeah, he went above and beyond.
Oh, so, yeah.
And that's great that he took you, his partner, with him. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah.
That's really good.
And so we... He used to have to buy the pencils and paper and things because the school system didn't provide anything, and I think it still doesn't.
Yeah, unfortunately, nothing has changed in that area.
And so, yeah, and also, he was an English teacher, and he would teach the kids English, and, you know, and you had these kids who really didn't read much. And he was able to get them to the point of where they were having arguments about books that were so esoteric and, you know, English literature stuff. And, oh, man, he got them very interested in that. So he affected a lot of their lives. And as an English teacher, he taught about 200 kids to read in the first place because they arrived in high school. They could not read. Period. Not they couldn't read well, they could not read. And so he would, you know, as the English teacher, not part of his job, start teaching them how to read because he says, we're going to read this book. And I don't know how to read. Well, you're going to find out how now. And so after some years of this, the school made him the reading teacher, and it became his job, instead of teaching English, to teach reading. And so he taught, we know, about 200 people before, 200 kids, before he became the reading teacher. And then after he became the reading teacher, probably a couple thousand kids he taught to read, because the kids were showing up just unable to read at all. And, you know, that's a devastating thing. You need to learn to read when you're a little kid and it becomes a part of you. And instead, these kids are between 14 and 18 when he got them. And, you know, he did what he could, and he taught a lot of them to read. But it's really terrible that they didn't learn how to read when they were much younger. But I guess those teachers just couldn't get into teaching them for whatever reason. And they did not learn how to read when they were younger than high school age. Also, 50 years ago, I was in the midst of jury duty. It was my first time on jury duty, and it was sort of interesting. And we had to show up every day, and I got picked for a trial. And we sat there and listened to all this stuff. And a lawyer who was totally incompetent won the case because... What happened was he was just terrible. He would try to, and Shakespeare said, and you know, Shakespeare never said that. And the jury members knew Shakespeare never said what he, and you know, this wasn't a bunch of English teachers in the jury. Just, he said things that, you know, he claimed Shakespeare said that it would be obvious Shakespeare never said. And he also announced to all of us that this was his first case as a criminal defense lawyer. He had been a lawyer for years and years, but he was now branching out into criminal defense work. And this was his first case, and we could tell it was. And he was doing that to get sympathy and, you know, please don't be too harsh on me because you can tell I'm incompetent. You know, don't find the client guilty because I don't know what I'm doing. And we're all saying, oh, Jesus Christ. And so he went along with that. And then toward the end, he brought in another lawyer who was more experienced at criminal defense work because he was really blowing it badly. And but the guy got off because the claim was that the guy had knifed this woman in a domestic quarrel thing. He had knifed this woman, and she had a tiny scratch on a finger. Did he do it? Did he not? And part of the defense was, part of the prosecution was, that he would have murdered the woman, except her mother fought him off and dragged him away from the daughter. So this guy's like 6 feet tall. The mother, who is alleged to have dragged him away and forcibly gotten him away from her daughter. She was like maybe 5 feet tall or less. She was very elderly. She spoke so softly the jurors couldn't really hear her, and she needed a lot of help walking to the witness stand. And this is not someone who could grab this guy and pull him off anyone. She was very taxed with walking across a room. And so that really did it. And people said, no, you know, there's reasonable doubt here. I mean, clearly something was happening between these two, but the prosecution is making it look like he's, you know, going to butcher her any second. And, you know, it's just not enough to convict a guy. And so he was found not guilty. And so that was my jury duty, my first jury duty right then and there. And that was interesting. And also, on December 20th, 1973, Intro 475, what we referred to then as the Gay Rights Bill, failed for the fourth time in the New York City Council. So that was December 20th, 1973, the fourth failure. I think that was it for Intro 475. It got reintroduced and had a different number. I think this was the time it became Intro 1. At some point, it got introduced as Intro 1, but at other times, it had other numbers. So anyway, Intro 475, very famous, and it failed for the fourth time just 50 years and 10 days ago. And this is me looking through my old notebook, and I also found that I was having what I then called my, quote, Army horror dreams at the time. Oh, God. Yeah, PTSD was not a known term yet, but it was happening to a lot of people. So I was having those things. And I want to note that tomorrow, December 31st, will be the 51st anniversary, not the 50th, but the 51st anniversary of the last time I went to a gay bathhouse. So there's a bit of history from 50 and 51 years ago. And the governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, who is a Republican, has vetoed a bill that would have banned gender-affirming care for trans minors. He had actually listened to doctors and parents of trans kids and what they had to say, and the medical people saying this is really important that these kids get this treatment and therapy. And so he vetoed this bill. This is typical of a lot of the Republicans. The right wing figures, oh, let's beat up on those trans people. We can really beat them up. They're unpopular. And so they're doing this. This is, you know, what we used to call fag bashing in the old days. It has a nuance on it because we're not just gay anymore. We're LGBT plus infinity folks. And so they figure they can beat up trans people and say, oh, we can't have them. This is like the old thing of homosexuals recruiting children to become homosexuals. And, you know, we were all saying, nobody recruited me. Just gay. What the hell? And so anyway, this is a slight variation on that. But I'm glad that Mike DeWine, the Republican governor of Ohio, vetoed this lousy legislation that the rest of the legislature had come up with. And Governor DeWine said, quote, were I to sign House Bill 68, Ohio would be saying that the state, that the government knows better what is medically best for a child than the two people who love that child the most, their parents, unquote. And it will require a 3/5 majority vote to override his veto, and I don't know if that's likely or not in the Ohio legislature. I guess we'll find out soon. So there's this very high-profile battle going on now over keeping Donnie Bonespur Trump off the ballots for the Republican primary election because of his violation of the Constitution's, quote, insurrectionist disqualification clause, unquote, which is in the 14th Amendment. And so this stuff is still going on where people are saying, let's have our legislature pass a law taking him off the ballot because he violated the 14th Amendment. It says you can do that. And so it's a big fight back and forth, and it's obviously going to go to the Supreme Court. Maine has kicked Trump off the ballot there. California has allowed him to remain on the ballot. And a Colorado court has made a ruling, and it's getting thumped around through more courts. In Michigan, they said, keep them on. And it's going through a whole bunch of different states that are considering whether or not to deny Trump the ability to run for president because he is someone who was an insurrectionist. He obviously did try to overthrow the government. And so, yeah, this is all going to be to the Supreme Court. And oh, boy, oh, boy. And I think he should. My reading is, yeah, he's disqualified. And that's it. If you just read it, I think he's disqualified. However, I really do suspect that the Supreme Court, many of whom view Trump as their benefactor, they're gonna say, oh no, this doesn't apply, even though it isn't that it's unconstitutional, it's actually in the Constitution. But they are gonna do this because they're just bad people on that court. At least 2/3 of them are bad people. Oh well. In the past week, Trump also has been getting some publicity, which he loves, because he's been spouting actual Nazi rhetoric from 100 years ago. He was at a New Hampshire campaign speech, and Trump said that immigrants entering the United States illegally are, quote, poisoning the blood of our country, unquote. I don't know that Trump reads history books, but maybe he saw a video that had that kind of rhetoric on it, or maybe some right-wing creep wrote the speech for him, and he was stupid enough to just read it aloud. But this is the kind of thing Hitler was saying. This was part of the Nazi Party platform 100 years ago. And so, wowee. Trump still has people voting for him because I guess they just say, yeah, that's right. I guess they just like Nazism.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. They do. They feel that this is, well, they're white nationalists, most of them. There's even some people who aren't white who are white nationalists, which is like staggering, but
white nationalism is multicultural and multiracial,
but mostly white. But, yeah.
Well, white supremacy,
yeah. Well, this is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, holy hell. I mean, not that many years ago, that kind of a statement, bang, he'd be gone. He'd be totally forgotten. The lid would come down on him and, you know, nobody would mention him again. But now he has a following and he says stuff like this and they go with it. This is terrible. Of course, this is also showing up in other countries where they're saying, look what's happening in America. We should be worried. And they should be. So, oh boy. So, yeah, Donnie Bonespur Trump is talking about poisoning the blood of our country. Now, what they were talking about then was in Nazi Germany was people like gypsies and other people, of course, the Jews. And they were talking about, and they're interbreeding with true German Aryans, and that's what this was about, that whole Aryan race nonsense. And so that's where that rhetoric comes from America. There is no single race in America, so the blood of the country is whatever the hell anybody's got flowing through their arterial system. But the thing is, Trump is going to copy that rhetoric. I wonder if he's going to copy more of it. I mean, he got a lot of publicity out of this. And his base loves this kind of thing. The white supremacists like it. I wonder if he's going to repeat this and how far will he get with it. I mean, the in January, we start getting these primaries, the Republican primaries, and we'll see what the hell they come up with. I mean, right now, it looks from the polls like he's crushing everybody else. So he doesn't even have to go to these debates, so-called debates. And he just goes out and does what he pleases, and they're going to vote for him. Well, I guess we'll see if some more, you know, Goebbels rhetoric from the grave comes up. And
you thought the American Bund was gone? Oh, no, my friend.
Yeah, something else reaching out of the grave, yes, to influence somebody.
Ugh.
Terrible people.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Oh, here comes the BAI pitching train, and yes, the pitching hobos are on the BAI pitching train. And it's that time of year, and the pitching hobos are saying Merry New Year. Merry New Year to all of you out there who are our listeners, and we hope that some of you will become BAI buddies. Yes, this is WBAI New York, and we are listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio, and we really mean that. We don't have commercials, but we have some listeners, not as many listeners as we'd like, but we have some listeners, and you, the listeners, are the people who sponsor us. Yes, what happens is we are going to beg you for some dough, and we're going to ask you to become sustaining members of WBAI. And what we ask you to do is go to your phone, dial 1-212-209-2950, and when the call center picks up, say, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. BAI buddy is the name we have for the WBAI sustaining membership, which means that you would donate once a month to WBAI. And what happens when you call 1-212-209-2950 is that when they say hello, you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy, they will ask for your credit card or debit card number so that they can charge that, and they will also ask how much you want to donate. You can donate on a monthly basis, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you have it. Something like that. And, you know, I think maybe it'll take like a $17 deal. Yeah, I guess they can. Once they write it down, it's just machines deal with the moving the money around. So you can get it for $10 or more, and you will be donating to WBAI. You will also tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged as a BAI buddy. And they'll be charged on the date when it's convenient for you. And so this is something that's really going to be necessary here. We need to raise money to keep BAI on the air. And the only way we could really do it right now is by getting you to call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And it's important to mention Back of the Book because we need to let management know we have listeners. And the way management knows we have listeners is because they pledge their BAI buddies. And on this program, we have three BAI buddies and a number of people who've donated, made one-time donations. You can make a one-time donation for whatever amount you want. I think it still has to be over $10. And you can call 1-212-209-2950 and say, I want to make a one-time donation in the name of Back of the Book. And you'll give them all that same information, and they will deal with it. And, you know, they'll charge your credit card or debit card. I think that if you want to make a one-time donation, you can also pledge and have them send you a bill. I think they still do that. That used to be the only way it worked, by the way. But, you know, we're in a modern age, and it's all, hey, let's see if we can move the money faster. And so it's credit cards and debit cards. It is preferred that credit cards or debit cards gets used, because otherwise people get the mail and say, oh, I got to deal with that. And then 6 months later, they say, oh, was I going to do something? Was I going to send something to BAI? So 1-212-209-2950. You can call that number, and you will be also, besides having WBAI stay on the air, you will also be saying, hey, we want these overnight programs to stay on the air. Because a part of what's happening is, again, I keep mentioning this, and this keeps coming up, people are pitching, have been pitching the idea of BAI renting out its airtime from midnight to 6 a.m. There are even ideas of, you know, taking a bigger chunk than that out of the day. And so the current proposal that I keep hearing is midnight to 6 a.m., which wipes out all of the overnight programs on WBAI. We're all gone. And so that would be bad. WBAI has had these overnight programs that are different from what else you'll hear elsewhere on the radio, different from what else you'll hear on WBAI at other times of day. And so we have had these programs that do different things, that appeal to underserved communities. And there are all sorts of underserved communities. We have appealed over the time to people who are kind of not fitting in. That's what happens with Back of the Book. We talk to those of you who don't necessarily fit in. Maybe you have an interest in the science stuff and all of that. Maybe you have an interest in somebody talking about being openly gay at times. And so, yeah, this is different radio. All right. And, oh, boy, we're running out of time. So I got to say, please, please call 1-212-209-2950 if you want to keep having not just Back of the Book, but these overnight radio programs on the air. If you want to keep the overnight radio programs on the air, you got to call 1-212-209-2950 and say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And not all the programs pitch, so it's important that the program that pitches in an overnight gets some new BAI buddies. Again, 1-212-209-2950. And we want to thank David and Seth and Tony and Bettina for being people who donate to WBAI through Back of the Book. And hey, you know, if you become a BAI buddy, and if we find out about it, you can also write to us. We will thank you at some point. And you can write to me and let me know if you've pledged. I am rpm@glib.com. rpm@glib.com. And let me know that you pledged, and we'll check it out with management, make sure it went through, and that'll work out. Okay. Again, final time, 1-212-209-2950. Please call that number now and become a BAI buddy. And that has been it for Back of the Book for 2023. Coming up next is
Everything Old is New Again, again with Dave Kenny.
Dave Kenny. And so, we're scheduled to be back here next week. Let's hope the schedule holds together. Take care of yourselves. Enjoy what you can of the time. The December twilights are still there for a couple of days. They can be very nice looking. And again, allow all of that joyful stuff and the bright lights. Let that help you out. What the hell? Why not? And above all, remember what that getting ready to just watch another year roll by Dormouse said.
I'm Carlos Menchaca.
And I'm Jeff Simmons.
And we're the hosts of your weekly Sunday show, City Watch. We volunteer because we believe in WBAI, bringing you community radio that's original, authentic, and unique.
Since you're a listener, you know that WBAI brings you independent voices that commercial stations can't or won't.
By becoming a BAI buddy, you keep WBAI going with a monthly gift that you choose. If you contribute at least $15 each month, we'll send you a WBAI tote bag. Become a BAI buddy today by calling 212-209-2950 or visit WBAI.org and click on the green BAI buddy sign with the peace dove.
We're here for WBAI, and we hope you'll be here for us too by becoming a BAI buddy today.
Don't want to use the website or the call center to contribute to WBAI? That's okay. Please feel free to send your check or money order to WBAI, 3rd floor, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Please make a check or money order out to Pacifica-WBAI. We thank you for your donation and hope that you will spread the word and tell your friends. And please keep on listening.
It's an Arts Express Holiday Edition with host Prairie Miller coming your way at a special time this week, 6 p.m. this Sunday, New Year's Eve. We've got another great show. Actor Matthew Good talks about his new film, Freud's Last Session, featuring Anthony Hopkins. We present a dramatic reading from Gazan poet Mosab Abu Tohav's poem, Palestine from A to Z. And Breck Gregory finds out how the Pentagon and the CIA took Hollywood. A conversation with filmmaker Matthew Alford. All that plus the great Garland Nixon's commentary. That's Arts Express, 6 p.m. this New Year's Eve.
David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to you stopping by.
I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
Thanks to you.
Thank you for thinking of me.
And I thank you.
And I thank you.
Let me say thank you.
I want to thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Yo, this is G-Love on WBAI, New York, New York.